On today's show, Dabo Swinney not taking any transfers, which makes the season opener against Georgia loom even bigger. The perils of noon kickoffs. I go to war with the New York Times over lawn care. And there's another couple beer bandits in Fort Worth. Head on a swivel.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
I don't want to hear about some architect, a landscape architect in the Hamptons telling me what I should do.
Russ Dellinger.
Did you used to pronounce it Dabo?
And SI's Pat Forty.
Smoke a brisket before, smoke a pipe afterwards, whatever.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. And, as a host, I try to get right to the football talk. I don't like the chit-chat at the beginning of pods. How was your weekend? Did you see a movie? I mean, bored when that actually involves. I would hate to have to listen to that. I hate listening to that when I'm a podcast host. Like, I don't want to have that conversation with anybody. However, I do have a question that is non-football related that stems from the weekend. And that is our resident Louisville. Our resident Louisville resident and man who was covering the PGA Tour last week. Pat, what did you do to piss the Louisville Police Department off so much that they arrested Scottie Scheffler? This has to be your fault. What is going on?
Much as Scottie Scheffler's attorney will avow, I am completely innocent of any charges. I woke up at 6:45
In this case,
on Friday, I did nothing wrong. Okay. I was not involved in any traffic mayhem. But that was quite something to wake up and like what happened? Where, what? The world's number one golfer just got arrested and somebody was killed by a bus. Okay. Not a very good morning out at Valhalla, but I didn't figure that covering the second round of the PGA would take a backseat to covering the cops and courts beat. But there we were. Louisville's a strange place, as you know, and this was peak Louisville in terms of strange shit.
Have you been to the jail cell? You have been at any point? You don't have to say what the charge was, but did you know what he went through?
I have been to the Jefferson County Jail to interview people, not to be booked.
All right.
I have never been booked.
Never been booked. All right.
So, but I might be going to his arraignment tomorrow. I've also been down for that sort of thing.
Not guilty. He's going to plead not guilty. I would imagine. Yeah. They're really going to arraign him? They're going to do this?
I don't know. We'll see if the charges get dropped today. I don't know.
Pretty good times. Golf made golf interesting. So
yeah.
I wonder if he stayed in Louisville last night tonight. Is he like lingering around the city?
Yeah. Good question. My guess is he's got to appear at
an arraignment.
Well, we'll see if his attorney
would he come back?
Can do
you
it.
Know, would he fly back? I mean, he's got enough money to fly back and forth if he
wanted
to.
Well, yes, I'm sure he can private jet his way around as he so pleases. But he might also just be able to have his attorney show up for him. But I'll be looking for him tomorrow morning down there.
Keep us posted.
Let's go. If he
stuck around, go to the local pub. You might find him. You know, didn't he take the green jacket to like some pub in his hometown? He seems to like a good beer.
Yeah. But I think he's probably going to try to keep things on the low profile this week here. Especially.
Probably avoid getting arrested twice. And
he should wear it to the arraignment. That's what he should wear to the arraignment.
Just to remind people who they're messing with. This is who you're messing with.
I mean, when you win the Masters, you get to keep the jacket for 1 year outside of the grounds. After that, you have to return the jacket to Augusta National. You can only wear it on the grounds. So there's only one guy at any time that can be walking around with one of those things. Scottie Scheffler is it. Right. It's like my cousin Vinny, like I want a suit with some form of cloth. Right. Like he has to walk in with the Masters jacket. Not guilty, Your Honor.
That would be great.
It's a nice coat. I'm sure it's handcraft. I mean, I'm sure it's the highest quality. Everything else is at Augusta National.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, he's got a chance to. He's a really sleepy Scotty Scheffler, right? He's not interesting. That would make him interesting.
Yeah. I mean, it was amazing how fast the free Scotty shirts popped up, like within hours, all over the golf course there. He's now, and he played better coming out of the slammer than the next day. See, I think he became such a hardened criminal that he couldn't adjust to life on the outside.
Yeah, institutionalized, you know? Right? It's like Shawshank, right?
Exactly. Like Red. Red was here. Red struggled.
Red struggled. Who was the guy before him? The librarian?
Yeah.
He tragically ended. But yeah, mm-hmm. One of the high Brooks. Comedy. Brooks was here.
Brooks was here.
Scotty was here.
Yeah.
R.I.P. Brooks.
Yeah.
So good. All right. In the non-Law and Order bit, we've discussed this a few times, but it came back up last week. William Christopher Sweeney, Dabo Sweeney. I think I'm getting better at it, by the way.
You are.
Dabo. Now that they ain't winning anymore, I can say his name, I guess. Dabo.
Did you used to pronounce it Dabo?
Yeah, yeah.
You did, didn't
oh,
you?
Oh, yeah. I knew it. Dabo, yeah.
I knew it.
It's not a real word. It's not a real word.
Yeah.
It's Dab Boy. That's what it stands for. Dat Boy. That's what the kids used to call him, and then he took
Dabo.
Right. And so I don't know if there's really a pronunciation for a not real word. That was anyway, William Christopher is the coach at Clemson. He's been very successful there. Won a couple national titles, took Clemson to the you know, elite of the elite that it had never really been. Bits and starts here. I mean, they'd win one title before, but for the most part, it was, you know, a Clemsoning. It was a little old Clemson. It was all that. And then along comes Coach Sweeney, and he does a great job. But there were four schools that did not take a transfer, four Division I football teams. Our FBS teams did not take a transfer this year. They were Army, Navy, Air Force, and not the Marines, little old Clemson. Now, obviously, I don't know that Army, Navy ever take transfers in any, like students of any time. I don't know. It'd be
very rare. Yeah.
If they do
it's hard enough to get in as a freshman.
Yeah. This is not a transfer. Yeah. I don't think I'll check that out for a semester. You do get paid. They have had a robust NIL program for many years since you are a member of U.S. military. But, you're not transferring into the long gray line. That's all right. We understand. Clemson just ain't doing it. And this has become, at this point, it's like a standoff. Like, who's going to blink first, right? It's a blinking contest. Is he going to do it or not? And this year, I thought they'd probably grab a couple guys. Instead, they do not. So his quotes over the weekend, these are the quotes that took attention. He just briefly, he explains it as like, and I find this to be extremely admirable and pretty much everything you would want out of your coach. I recruit these kids. I believe in them. We're going to develop you. You come to Clemson. We're not just going to recruit over you. We're not going to run you off. Maybe not. I don't know. Guys leave, but we're going to believe in you. We're going to pour everything into you. We're not taking the easy road out. We don't want you to take the easy road out. Right. Great stuff. But he's not doing roster management the way everyone else is doing roster management in 2024, let alone even 2022, 2021. His quotes got some attention. These are secondary quotes to his thinking, but I mean, it's pretty simple. He said, most of the guys in the portal aren't good enough to play for us. That's just the reality of it. They went 4-4 last year in the ACC. Also, that is true most because most of the portal is, you know, it's like, I mean, it's a group of five guys transferring around. It's FCS kids. But there's some. They're good enough to play at Ohio State and Alabama. And Texas and Michigan and everybody else, they're good enough to play at Clemson. Then he said it wasn't really an intentional thing. There were a couple guys we looked at, but they've got to love you all. They've got to love you too. So he just kind of missed on those guys. And then he had this classic just troll job. If he trolls everyone, it makes everyone go. I think he has like a couple burner accounts, right, on social media, just to see people go crazy. Honestly, every player is technically a transfer. We just signed a whole class of guys who will transfer in from high school. People who the unawares, people would just know, like, I mean, we went crazy over that. Like, dude, he's playing with you. Right. He's doing that so the outrage, the social media outrage crew will go outrage. Anyway, Pat, can this be maintained?
Well, a couple of things I would say. First, he is mathematically correct that most of the kids in the portal can't play for Clemson. I mean, they are not good enough. And yeah, they went 4-4 in the ACC, but they finished 9-4 and they won their last five games after Tyler and Spartanburg sounded off. So, see, every time Dabo gets mixing it up, his team does okay. So we'll see if this is his latest point of riling everyone up and then using it as maybe focus or motivation for his team. I don't know. But no, I don't think it could be maintained. No, you got to play by the 2024 rules of the game. And so you've got to go out and get some people as opposed to relying on your high school transfers coming in. And, you know, more mature, proven, capable guys that you can plug in and they can play immediately, like the people that are beating you in the ACC or elsewhere. Yeah, you can't sit there and say we're just going to keep doing things like it's 2018 anymore now, because it's not anymore.
It is amazing how, you know, coaches often like, and we've talked about this quite a bit on the show, like coaches often like to act like they don't pay attention to the outside world and social media and Twitter. And I remember sitting in Dabo's office maybe 2 years ago, and it was pretty clear to me that he plays plenty of attention to it and know it exists and know the buzz exists about him in his resistance to certain things maybe the other coaches are doing. And it feeds into exactly what Dan was saying about he's just pulling your leg, people. You know, he's just pulling your leg with the talk about everybody are transfers, or everybody is a transfer. It's and so I just kind of laughed at that. And I think, you know, there's video, I believe there was like a video of it, you know, because he did it on ACC Network, and they're, you know, he's like chuckling and stuff. I mean, this is him, this is who he is. It is surprise that time I sat in with him about 2 years ago, a year and a half ago. He, you know, I remember asking him, like, when are you gonna take a transfer? And of course, at the time, I think they had just taken the quarterback transfer who was transferring back to Clemson. And it was like the only transfer they had taken in like 5 years or something. Forgot his name. So he brought that up, right? He's like, well, we just got a transfer. You know, he transferred back here. I'm like, okay, great. But are you going to get any more? And I remember him saying, and I think I've said this on the show before, like, we'll get more when we have room. And in order for us to have room, people have to transfer out. And it doesn't happen as often there, certainly, as it does at other places. So here we are.
Dabo, like, his whole thing is like doing things his way and his way. You know, I remember meeting with him early in his career, and he'd be like these grandiose visions. He'd carry around a sign that said, like, everything is possible. It's like nothing is not possible. And he had all, you know, all the hokey sayings and all the rah-rah. And you're like, how is this guy even for real? Like, he's so positive and over the top, and he just talk about everything. And Ross is completely right. He knows everything that's getting said about them. He's trying to, you know, we got this record against this and this, and he's got all his stats, and he's constant salesman. And you're like, how is this actually going to be? But he's so infectious in his positivity that he got all these guys. He got this recruit. I mean, they had a 5-year stretch. It went 69-5.
Yeah.
Won two titles.
If it weren't for Alabama, they would have been by far the best program in the country during that stretch.
Right. Little old Clemson. And he did all this stuff, and he's like, I'm doing it my way. And now his way was getting, you know, incredible recruits. including Trevor Lawrence, Deshaun Watson, and all these guys. But they were never getting those guys before Dabo came along and just was just relentlessly positive and talking to players and their parents this way. And so, he has a benefit of a doubt of, like, he doesn't do everything by the book. He's worked miracles before. And like I said, I think if you were to say, how would you like your child to be treated? How would you like your coach to act? All those things. What is the most collegiate version of college football? This would kind of be it. I mean, it's a great ideal to follow. I believe in you. I sat in your living room. I talked to your coaches. I talked to your mom. I need you. I think we can make you a player here as a sophomore. I'm not just going to bring in a senior from, the Citadel to take your spot. You've earned this right to be the starter. It's very high school sports. This is our team this year. Maybe this senior class doesn't make it to regionals, but you know what? We had a great year anyway. Next year, we got all these soft. We're going to get there. We'll be back, right? He's coaching it that way, and it's really not. It's nice to hear. It's just the last 3 years he's 30-10, and when you set that 30-10, he did go 4-4 ACC. He won 8-0 the year before, so it's still Clemson. They still got a lot of guys, and there's still a lot of high school recruits who want to do this. But you can't 69-5 to 30-10 is tough, and it's basically you're not using all the tools at your disposal. I mean, at what point are you not serving your players by adding help?
It's just like an NFL team in the draft, right?
You can't just go with draft picks.
Right.
You go, man, we're going to make a trade at the deadline and bring in another interior offensive lineman to help because we're a little thin at that. We're gonna sign this guy. This kid he's not good. And so, were you disloyal? Was Jim Harbaugh disloyal when he brings in 6 or 7 transfers, whatever, to fortify that team last year? Or was he actually honoring and helping J.J. McCarthy and Blake Corum and all the guys that did stay by saying, hey, we're going to give you the extra guys to go win? I don't think, it's tricky. So it's you kind of like I do find it admirable. I know everyone likes bagging on Dabo, and he plays into it. But if you're a Clemson fan or you're the Clemson administration, at what point do you sit there and say, look, but can you imagine a general manager of a professional sports team just being like, we don't do free agency?
When free agency is available to you and is within the rules, and you better be doing it for sure. And that, Dabo reminds me, he seems to be like one of those guys, and I would put Jimbo Fisher in this category as well, where he's never lost an argument. He always believes everything he's saying is right. And he's not necessarily, a abrasive guy, but if you challenge his worldview, he's going to come back and he's going to explain why he's right. And I think he's a hard guy to win an argument with, and those people, it can be hard to get them to change their modus operandi of, hey, you have to actually do things differently here at little old Clemson than we have been doing it, even as good as we were. That's were now. We need to be are. We need to be present tense, and there does need to be a little bit of an alteration of the strategy.
I think the main reason that the blue blood, so to speak, the top 20 or so programs, football programs, get transfers is normally to plug little holes, right? Maybe where you're a little weak here and there. And it doesn't mean signing 15 transfers, right? It means signing maybe 4 or 6 or so transfers to plug some holes and maybe add some depth. And that can be the difference in a win and a loss. And I was just going back through, I think Dan mentioned with the 10, 10 losses, the last three or so seasons? I was just totaling through them. 3 of the 10 were in overtime, 1 in double overtime. 3 more were by 1 score, including 1 by 1 point. So you got 6 to 7 of the 10 there where they are right there, and the difference could be 1 player.
Tigers open season in Atlanta against Georgia. Georgia be number one or number two. And for years, beating Georgia was like, they weren't in the ACC, but that was one of the teams he was chasing. Certainly was chasing Florida State mainly, and then he was chasing Alabama. But Georgia is a huge deal for Clemson because so many of their players are from the Atlanta area. Obviously, it's not far from the Georgia border. I think it's 2 hours to downtown Atlanta or so from Clemson, and the north suburbs of Atlanta have so many good players. And those are obviously, you know, hour and a half, hour 20 up to Clemson. So in terms of proximity, Georgia is a huge deal. And Clemson was the better program for a while, helped prove itself by beating Georgia at times in these games. This to me feels like a much bigger game than just the opener in a season where we have an expanded playoff and no one is knocked out of the title chase on August 31st. Like, this is a show me game, and I can feel fairly confident that the guys down in Athens are just as obsessed at making sure everybody knows their program is better than Clemson for future recruiting, because these two really go head to head just so much, even though they're in different leagues, that this is a huge game for Georgia Bulldogs too. So how important is this game and how excited are you for it?
Yeah, it's huge. I think it's going to be noon on that first Saturday. So that will be the first centerpiece game really of the season. And if you go back to 2021, guys, that was the sea change game for both programs. They met in the opener in Charlotte. It was like 4 million degrees. I was there. And Georgia won 10-3 in an absolute slog. But that launched Georgia's undefeated national champion team. Actually, not undefeated because they lost to Alabama in the SEC championship. But they won the national championship. And that was kind of the end of Clemson's run, because 2020, they were outstanding. Had a great season. Lost to Ohio State in the playoff. But then after that, it's life after Trevor Lawrence. They lose that game. They score 3 points. They struggle all season offensively. DJ Uiagalelei is the quarterback. He's supposed to be the next great thing. He's not. The next year, they're a little bit better. And then last year, they're a little bit worse. And so you could argue that Clemson hadn't been the same since the last time they played Georgia, and Georgia hadn't been the same in a better way. And now we'll see if they can reverse roles, or if that remains the status quo for those two programs.
Ross, let me ask you this. How long do Clemson fans have the right to complain? It might be at 3 o'clock on August 31st.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Well, they're already complaining, right? Because they're not used
Tyler from Spartanburg.
Not used to averaging 3 losses a year, and that's what they have the last few seasons. But certainly there'll be backlash, and they'll be complaining, immediately after the game, because at some point you have to win these games again. I feel like, and yeah, you can still make the playoff and all that, but if you can't win some of these games, what's your chances of actually advancing in the playoff? So I think at some point you have to start winning these games, and you know what's going to happen if they lose, right? Is you're going to hear the conversation come up from fans of exactly what we're talking about, right? And it's similar conversations. Gosh, it reminds me, I hate to compare Dabo to Les Miles, and I'm not doing that exactly. I want to make that clear. But I remember covering LSU, and that when LSU started on its kind of decline, probably right around 2013, 2014 under Les, that was the booming complaint from the fan base, is he won't change. He won't change. In that regard, it was he won't change offensively. He won't adapt offensively. And I think you'll hear, and you already have heard, but certainly if they lose that opener, you'll hear Clemson fans say, you know, Dabo won't change with the landscape of college athletics with the transfer situation. And I am very much ready, kind of prepared to hear that. And I'm sure he is too. And I'm sure that's probably driving him to work like he does and win these games.
Yeah. That's just a huge, huge game. I think, like, obviously programs come and go, right? They fade, they go. Coaches don't always maintain, you know, the Nick Sabans are the rarities. And sometimes it's, well, we were, yeah, slow to adapt maybe on an offense. You know, I think back to like the end of the Lloyd Carr era at Michigan, which certainly wasn't as decorated, though they did win a title. But like they weren't ready to cover the spread. They didn't know how to cover spread defense. And they got beat by Appalachian State and Oregon back to back. And it was like, what is going, like, fix this. And they did. You know, they got there. Sometimes you'll have, yeah, stuck with an assistant too long or recruiting. Guys get a little lazy. I just can't remember somebody just actively not using a tool at their disposal. Like, it just would. I think if you went to Ryan Day or Kirby Smart or any almost anybody, Steve Sarkisian, they just don't like what? Like they're all gas, no brakes, as Sark says. Clemson's not. They're doing it their own way. I can't, you know, there's times transfers don't, Notre Dame can't get a gazillion transfers. It's hard to get them in. Stanford, certain schools, right? But not Clemson. They should be able to do it.
I will say too, yeah. The one area where they do certainly have a glaring need for that influx of some talent is receiver. And they haven't addressed that. And there's been like 3 years in a row where Clemson has nobody who can take the top off of defense. They have no deep threats. They may, you know, maybe it's partly on quarterbacks who can't get the ball to them downfield, but mostly it looks like guys that can't run away and separate and make big plays down the field. And that, those are the kind of guys you can get in the portal, or at least try to get some, you know, and change the complexion of your offense. Because last year they averaged 6.3 yards per attempt. The year before that, 6.8. The year before that, 6.0. That's pitiful. Like, you are not a big play offense if you can't throw the ball downfield better than that. And receivers can be gotten in the portal, but Clemson didn't get them.
It's going to be a hell of a game. It's a hell of an opener. There's subplots. Yeah. Like I said, George is going to want to curb stomp them. If they can. And so it's going to be, at least it won't be hot. It won't be hot. So, Pat, you mentioned the game's at noon. Some of the TV times are starting to trickle out. And obviously the first weekend, August 31st, that's going to be Labor Day weekend. That game is at noon. And we have found Fox, by bringing back the noon game, the big noon kickoff. That game is on ABC, but it'll be at noon. So they are grabbing that time slot themselves, ESPN, rather than go prime time with Clemson, Georgia, which I'm almost certain that Charlotte game was in prime time. Big noon kickoff the next 2 weeks. Texas at Michigan is at noon. Alabama at Wisconsin is at noon. That's noon Eastern, 11 a.m. Central. So look, newsflash, sources, television runs the sport. Okay. I don't know if you guys have heard this. And newsflash, sources, television executives are interested in high ratings. They want many people to watch the game so they can then, they sell these things called commercials. Everyone makes money. And obviously it's not new that all these leagues are basically led around by their television partners. But if you're, so this is the riddle. They get really great ratings at noon. People want to watch college football at noon, they found out, which seemed to have been against the consensus as recently as a few years ago. But now they get great ratings for noon. But if you are a fan of the team, noon, and you were going to watch anyway, you're a Wisconsin fan, you watch all the Badger games, noon doesn't really do it for you. You'd rather it be at night. And if you are going to go to the game, or you are going to have one of these big football weekends, noon is the least desirable time. And so Clemson versus Georgia rather than a whole day build up in Atlanta and everyone having a good time. And then you play at 7 o'clock or 5 o'clock or whatever it is, even four, like the SEC title game, let alone Ann Arbor and Madison the next weekends, where you could have an all day tailgate. The weather is either, it could be hot, but it's also usually nice. You want a night game. It might be cooler. The weather might be terrific. September in Wisconsin. Are you kidding me? It's fantastic. And you get the whole party, the whole weekend. Alabama Crimson Tide coming to Madison, coming to Camp Randall. Like, that's one of the greatest college football party weekends you're ever going to have. The pageantry, everything. It doesn't really get a whole lot better than that. It's as good as it gets. Whether the game's competitive or not, I think it'd be pretty competitive. But regardless, you got Alabama coming north to Madison. This is fantastic. And the thing's at 11 a.m. It's hard to get a tailgate set up, let alone, you know, how drunk can you get? But let's say we're going to keep it within the reasonable bounds. It's just like, you can only, how early can you get there? Like, you just, gates might open at 6, like driving in from an, like, there's only so much time to get set up. You're having breakfast food. Like, you can't do all the stuff. So there's been a lot of frustration for the fans. Are they right? Like, I know there's nothing that's going to happen, but you feel the pain of our fans that want more than just the game, because college football is more than just the 60 minutes that get played, and don't really care whether there may or may not be an extra 500,000 TV audience.
Yeah, I will say, it doesn't matter. Of course, the fans can, as you said, the fans can complain to high heaven that the TV will have the games when TV wants to have the games, and the schools will roll over as they always do and say sure. And the Big Noon thing has been a huge success for Fox, so they ain't stopping that. It's my experience that there's never actually really a good time to play. The fans will complain no matter what. If it's a night game, then the older fans are like, well, we're not going to be leaving the stadium till 11:30. We're old. We got to drive home, you know. So there's always complaints on all sides of this. Howard Schnellenberger, when he was at Louisville, used to say the perfect time to play is 4 in the afternoon.
I kind of agree.
Have fun before the game, and you can go to dinner after the game. I mean, I thought he was right, really.
Smoke a pipe before the game, smoke a pipe after the game.
That's right, yes.
Depends what's in Absolutely. The pipe, depends how the game goes.
Smoke a brisket before, smoke a pipe afterwards, whatever. Yeah. But no, look, those noon, especially when it's an 11 a.m. start, that is tough. That is tough on the college kids, but they tend to get ready. They tend to get out there and get after it. I know that. The one that always sticks out to me is a little bit cruel and unusual is the Red River game in Dallas that's often an 11 a.m. start. And that city goes so hard the night before because most of the people are coming in. I mean, there's plenty of Dallas residents who go to the game and are fans of either school, but there's an awful lot of people that come in from elsewhere. And Friday night in Dallas is absolutely on fire. And then the next day, people are dragging around that Cotton Bowl and the state fairgrounds, which are very hard to get into. So that's a tough, tough 11 a.m. game. So I do feel badly for them. And then wait until the West Coast schools are being asked to play home games at, I don't know, 9 a.m., 10 a.m. as part of the Big Ten.
They'll do 9.
You see how early they can. I mean, Big Noon. Big Noon is 9 a.m. in Los Angeles, Eugene, and Seattle. We'll see. They may be saying now, we wouldn't do that to you. Oh, they'll do it. They'll do it.
Yeah.
I have little doubt. But, yeah, I mean, It's tough dealing with the noon kickoffs, but this is the sport the way they have it engineered, and again, the TV execs do not care whether the fans are inconvenienced.
I think the perfect time is between 3 and 4 to kick that ball off. You got plenty of time to build up, and then the traffic doesn't kill you after. I think the night game problem is the traffic out. Especially, like, I mean, you're putting 100,000 in places that shouldn't have 100,000. So NFL is bad enough, but NFL stadiums are generally speaking in the middle of a massive city that has, you know, 3 interstates crossing through it, and you can get them out, and people can take public transportation. They can like all that stuff. College football, like the traffic jam after a game. Like I know we've all covered the late game, and you sit there and like if it's a blowout, you get excited. If it's a home team getting blown out, it's kind of exciting because you start seeing them. You start seeing the taillights leaving. You're like, one less person's going to stop me from driving 2 hours after so I get my 6 a.m. flight tomorrow morning, right?
Amen.
So, yeah, try going to state college for the, you know, there's not a whole lot better than the night whiteout game in state college, right? Until it's over. Then it's not so good. Four hours to Harrisburg or something like that. Not fun. So, I love that late afternoon game, but I mean, you just think, Alabama's coming to Wisconsin. This is just going to be fantastic. What's the worst possible time they could have come up with? 11 a.m.
11. Yep. No, and you're right. That is going to be like the most anticipated home game there in who knows how long.
Yeah.
And that is a place they will go hard Friday night, no matter what.
Yeah, they'll go hard in the morning too. I mean, I have faith in them. I'm not scared. No.
Those Badger fans go.
On Wisconsin. All right, we're going to talk about the House case in a second, but not until this break. All right, I was going to ask Ross about the House case, but he seems to be working on the story.
We do have some breaking news, but not anything that's not unsurprising if you read our story Sunday. So the latest situation is there are 32 conferences in Division I. There are five power leagues according to the House case, right? Because the Pac-12 is still
They got the C-Dub.
Was a league when C-Dub. It was filed. So in C-Dub,
they got that sweet C-Dub money.
They got the five power leagues, five group of five leagues, and then you've got the other 22. Many of those non-football playing leagues, those 22, are requesting a different formula to be used on how the NCAA pays the back damages, the $2.77 billion in back damages in the House case. The current proposal is that the NCAA's national office, the group of five, in the non-football conferences, so the NCAA national office basically in the 22, will pay 60% of the back damages, about $1.6 billion, I believe, somewhere around there. And the Power Five will pay $1.1 billion. So it's a 60-40 split. So what's happening is the 22 are wanting to basically flip that. They want to pay 40% and the Power Fives take 60. The exact amount, I just got it. That's what I'm working on. I got the proposal from the 22. The exact amount is 58. They want the Power Schools to pay 58% of the back damages and they pay 42%. So what we're having here is a big surprise, a struggle over money. Could this be an issue with resolving the House settlement this week, which everything is supposed to transpire this week? There are votes already aligned this week to happen and be done by Thursday. So will this throw a little wrench into it? Perhaps. Is there going to be some compromise? Maybe a little bit. Certainly not probably to this degree where you flip the percentages completely. And I'll give you the argument on both sides. The 22, especially the non-football playing 22.
These are America FBS. East, right?
This is right. If this is those leagues, in fact,
Horizon League, Missouri Valley,
Ivies, of course, the Metro Athletic, Atlantic Conference, Northeast Conference, Ohio Valley, Patriot League.
I think I can make. Let me make the case for both, and then you tell me if I'm right.
Go ahead.
Okay. So just to recap, the House case is about NIL comes in play in what was it, 2021? Whenever NIL was allowed. So for 4 years prior, those athletes have a class action suit saying, hey, we should have got in on the NIL. You owe us because you blocked us from making NIL money. And so we are suing you, and you have to pay us back for the money we were denied by your rule change. And that's what that's what the House case is about. And we're talking, whatever, $2.7 billion or so, all this money. So, and it can only do 4 years because of some law, I don't know, whatever. So that's the case. Okay, so here's the case for the smaller leagues. If I'm America East, our guys weren't getting crap in NIL because no one's ever heard of them. They weren't getting on a Madden cover. They weren't going to have a whatever Allstate commercial during March Madness. If they, our boosters would have given them like $500, even like that one kid with the mustache from St. Peter's who had all those threes, all he got was the local BW threes, set him some chicken wings for dinner once. Like
Doug Eddard. Yep.
NIL is not our thing. We don't really participate in NIL because so you guys should take the burden of it because you're Alabama football and you're Kentucky basketball and you're whatever, right? You're Ohio State. You should pay it. Okay, that's their argument. Well, you can tell me why I'm right or wrong later. And then the big school's argument is pound sand. How are we doing? How am I doing?
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good. Yeah, I think that probably nails it. Yeah.
Who are you?
And they,
who are you?
Yes, that's exactly right.
Commissioner, America East commissioner is online. The what? The what? No. Listen, kid, I bought the Girl Scout cookies from down the street. At the grocery store. No, forget it. Pat?
Yeah. No, no. I mean, I that largely encapsulates it. And I've heard from several people in the 22 leagues that are not part of FBS in the last few days myself. And yeah, the belief is that they will tell you that Charlie Baker has spent too much time in too many meetings with the power conferences, is listening to them and just and factoring in how they want to see this settled more than he is anybody else, which, you know, you probably should listen to those people. But that, yes, that that they're being asked to shoulder a disproportionate amount of this, given where they stand in the firmament in terms of revenue and in terms of their participation of their players in this. And just because this says this is a Division I settlement, it doesn't mean that the tail end, so to speak, of Division I should be footing that much of the bill. So yeah, they would like to see a flip of this from 60-40 to 40-60 or thereabouts.
You guys nailed it. Yeah, that's amazing. Exactly right.
Guardrails.
That's exactly right.
mm-hmm. How many lawyers and consultants did they pay to come up with this? Like,
They are pushing back hard here the last
you
few gotta days,
admit it's
sure.
A pretty good deal if you're like, you know, you're like, you were like the eighth man, I don't know, you're the 12th man at the main Black Bear basketball team and you might get in on this. Yeah, where was my NIL money? Like, dude, you're lucky we even didn't we should have discontinued your key card for your dorm.
I averaged 6 points a game for a mid-level America East team.
Yeah.
I need my NIL.
I could have been Caitlin Clark. This is ridiculous. I mean, I agree with the small schools. They aren't really in NIL. I mean, so they're going to come out, well, you got this many students, and maybe, no, I mean, the big school should pay it, but. Golden rule, right? Who has the gold makes the rule.
Who has the gold makes the rule. That's the situation we've been in. This is what's playing out right now with the damages played out in March with the CFP distribution, right?
Yeah.
Just instead of
and that was a all D1 fight.
instead of just the FBS, this is all D1. But it's a similar battle kind of back and forth. But yeah, it you could make that argument, Dan, for sure. I think that the power schools as well, they're saying, yeah, well, first of all, they're pound sand, right? But I think the legal argument from them is, You help make these rules that are in question and being why we're being sued. You helped uphold these rules. And in some cases, you helped or you resisted changing these rules. And so you have the responsibility. That's their argument. And certainly you kind of nailed the argument of the non-FBS leagues, which is, hey, this is all going, mainly this is going to FBS football and basketball players. Like, this is, you know, this is not us. This is, we're paying your former players. That's unfair. And not only that, but your specific formula puts us at a disadvantage, right? And the formula basically is they took the basketball distribution, which the NCAA, you know, distributes the basketball revenue to schools, and however much distribution you got over a 9-year period from 2016 to 2024, that's the percentage that you will basically pay in back damages. So they did it based on basketball distribution, which is why the Big East is probably disproportionately penalized, because they have so many good basketball programs. If they got more of the distribution, that means they have to pay more of the back damages, even though their athletic budget, right, isn't what some of the football playing schools are.
Yeah, this. I mean, it largely boils down to the football schools telling everybody you got to ante up, and the non-football schools or non-big-time football schools saying, wait a minute, this is a football issue. Why are we being dragged into this? The interesting thing with the Big East is, well, I get what they're saying, but you actually do have NIL athletes that play basketball in the Big East, men's basketball and women's basketball. I mean, you've got some pretty high-profile athletes there at UConn, men and women, Marquette, Creighton, you know, so on and so forth. So
I'm less dealing with theirs, but they don't have both sports. So it's sort of, right. I don't know how they're divided. No. Look, they'll come to some settlement. Everyone will carry on. They'll carry on. But I certainly understand the argument when you're the American East.
Yeah. No, shockingly, there is a lack of collegiality in a major college issue here.
And I do like the big schools money trying to hit up the poor ones for
now. And I should note, like, in their calculations of the 60-40 split, saying that the power schools are going to pay 40% and then everybody else going to pay 60. The everybody else group also, again, I think it should be noted, like, includes the NCAA national office, which includes things like reserves, right, and other liabilities, and like insurance and all this other thing. They're coming up with you know, several million dollars, the national offices. Now, I think what the smaller schools would say is that, well, that's kind of like our money. That's coming out of, in various ways, that's coming out of our pocket, because we need those things more than the power conference schools do. It's kind of like on a granular scale, it's kind of like the power of school. There's not a ton of power schools that get at least a significant funding from their university, right? Their athletic department from their university. But in the G5, and certainly at these smaller schools, non-FBS, a lot of those leagues and those schools in those leagues get support from the university. It's kind of like a similar argument, I think, here is what they're making probably, is that it's like, you're taking money away from the NCAA national office, which is taking money away from us. And then you're also taking specifically our distribution money too. So
just raise tuition
on all sides. So,
it's coming out of,
or get some cash from your endowment. There you go.
I think that's how that works.
Good luck with that.
They made those rules. So, on to some other news. You know, I go to the New York Times every day because I play the Sudoku game, however the heck you say that word, Sudoku.
Yeah. Not to read any world events.
Sudoku?
I don't know. It's a bunch of numbers. It doesn't matter how you say it. Anyway, they got a great game.
They do.
But
I'm a Wordle and connections guy myself.
They got good games over there at the Times. I made the mistake, though, recently of checking out a story in the style section. If you know anything about me, you'd imagine that the New York Times definition of style and mine would probably be at odds. Should have just stuck to like the news. They got great stuff in the New York Times. A lot of good stories and stuff, and they're very, you know, the good got this massive reporting. You know, get the news.
You also subscribe to Vogue, I would imagine.
Yeah, of course. The style section had a headline that drew my attention. Lawns draw scorn, but some see room for compromise. This story so angered me, I went looking to leave a comment for the first time, but they did not have the comment section on. So now I was going to write a sternly worded letter to the editor, but then I decided I have a podcast about college football and it's May and there's nothing else to talk about.
There you go. You have your platform.
Listen here, New York Times. Screw you. But really, the reporter did a decent job. They tried to balance it. Okay. And they said, you know, the movement now is even the most ardent proponents of sustainable, ecologically mindful landscaping, and I would challenge that definition, but their definition of that, argue that a simplistic lawns are evil narrative is unhelpful. True. So this story is basically about how much lawn you should plant some native plants and maybe a meadow instead of a lawn, a meadow, because then the little moss and the bumblebees and stuff, but I don't know. And so you can see how this is, where this is headed. Okay. You can see this is headed.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So I am particularly incensed that this guy, Paul Robbins, who is the dean for the Nelson Institute for Environmental Studies at the aforementioned University of Wisconsin-Madison. Now, I will not allow Paul Robbins to impact my analysis of the Badger football program and Luke Fickell. Okay. I will not. But I'm not too happy with this. If you see this guy, make sure he doesn't get a ticket to the game. Green lawns, he said, as much as brown ones, are now seen as a moral failing.
Oh, dear.
Mm-hmm. We later have Edwina Von Gaal, a landscape designer in East Hampton, New York. Okay. There's nothing else like lawn for playing with your kids or dog or a frisbee, but I always ask people to think about how much lawn they need. How far can you throw a frisbee? Well, pretty damn far, Edwina. Yeah. Think farther than mine. I don't have that big of a lawn. Think of a lawn as more of a function than a fashion, because the fashion is changing. Well, it isn't at my house. These people want me to plant a meadow. A meadow, Pat.
Dan Wetzel is anti-moss and anti-bee.
There will be no meadow. You know what? It's like, have you heard this no-mow May thing? No-mow May? Don't mow, and you let your grass grow because it's good for the bugs and all that? Nah. No, there's no no-mow May. Yes, mow May. More mow May. What are you going to come out? It's like corn on the 4th of July, knee high on the 4th of July. What, you just let your yard go to crap? This no mow May is embraced by every lazy guy in the neighborhood.
I'm just doing it for the moths.
Go out and mow the lawn, honey. No, it's no mow May. I'm an environment. No, I'm mowing the lawn another time every time. Someone says no mow May to me, I mow it again, even if it doesn't need to be mowed. Here's Edwin Hollander, another landscape architect who works in the Hamptons. The Hamptons.
So you got Edwin and Edwina?
Edwina and Edwin.
Okay.
He's a landscape architect in New York City, Chicago, and the Hamptons. First off, what landscape architects are you doing in New York City? Potter?
Or Chicago.
A potter out in the... He says this about turf lawns can be monotonous. He says it's the same thing all the time. Whereas meadows not only change seasonally, but attract the spectacle of pollinators and, quote, all sorts of wonderful wildlife.
Brother, I live in Metro Detroit. You know what the wildlife is? Raccoons and possums. Yes. I don't know what you're talking about.
That's rats. What we'd be attracting here.
In New York City, you're going to build a... No, you're not. These people don't really have... they're not putting a meadow somewhere in New York City. You know what would go in there? Five critters and two guys. I mean, it'd be like people sleeping in there. What are you talking about? There is a war on the lawn, Pat. There's a war on the lawn. They're coming after us. I'm like a homesteader. I should be on Yellowstone. Yeah. My land, my mow. I'm mowing the baby. I'm going to mow it right after this show. I don't care. I mowed it this weekend. I don't care. I spread mulch. I'm going to spread more mulch. I bet it's terrible. this planet is not dying because of my little lawn, okay? It's not overheating. I will have
the most fired up Dan Wetzel has ever been on the podcast.
Enraged. And I've had like 2 weeks to cool down over this style story.
Wow. All right. Thank you, though. You've raised my awareness. I did not know there was a war on lawns out there and mowing. Ours is pretty well mowed. And I can tell you this, in Kentucky, if you take May and don't mow it, you won't even be able to see the house. Like the house would disappear.
Yeah.
The grass would grow so high. So I'm not down with that cause either. I will say it's funny, you know, we talked about this. My daughter's in Peru in the Peace Corps, and she showed a picture of our house to the family there, that's her host family she lives with, and they can't believe we got all that grass that we're not growing potatoes or corn or something on. Like, they think it's a massive waste of gardening space.
It is. So God bless America. It is.
Dan Wetzel's championing the SUV, the lawnmower.
The lawn is my lawn. Look it. I take pride in my lawn. I'm not saying it's center field at Yankee Stadium. It looks like that. I'm saying if Aaron Judge happened to wander through, he wouldn't be embarrassed. And I take pride in that.
You keep protecting your lawn. I affirm your right to protect your lawn.
I don't want to hear about some architect, a landscape architect in the Hamptons telling me what I should do. The science shows
versus Edwina.
The science shows that if you have roughly 70% natives, you're going to be able to support a healthy bird population. They can go somewhere else. They can fly. I got tons of birds in my yard.
I do too. We got a lot of birds and we mow, so.
I just can't believe Wisconsin Madison is involved in this.
Yeah. College town.
I might read his book just to hate read it. He's got a book.
So it's you against Edwina and Edwin and some professor.
The main guy who said it was a moral failing because my lawn's green.
Yeah.
Paul Robbins, author of Lawn People, How Grasses, Weeds, and Chemicals Make Us Who We Are. Well, that's probably true. All right. Rant over.
I don't think it's over. I don't think this will be over for a long time.
The lawn war has just begun. All right. We do have a crime story here. All right, we are all familiar with the Beer Bandit, one of our favorite criminals from Fort Worth, Texas. If you recall, the guy had these pterodactyl type arms. He had like reach. Like, then they measured Bronny James. He had like, he's 6'1", but he had like a 6'8" wingspan or something, right? This is Giannis level wingspan. And he went into a gas station in Fort Worth and scooped 5 cases of beer in his arms and walked out. Yeah, he was known as
my favorite criminal ever, really.
Just stole the beer, but he could carry so many beers. And I apparently got away with it. We never heard that he got apprehended. So he had a hell of a night, a weekend. I mean, 5 cases will do it. Well, I don't know what's up in Fort Worth. I don't know what's going on. Sonny Dykes, get your people together. Okay? But we have another beer bandit. But this is two guys. Okay? Fort Worth police are looking for 2 men. They go into a convenience store. They pull a gun on the store clerk. Well, here's what they do. They go to the fridge. They get the cold beer. They each grab 2 12-packs. So they have 4 12-packs of beer. And then as they walk out, you guys can watch this video. Fox 4.
Yeah, I just watched it.
Fox 4 is all over it. As they walk out, they point a, looks like an assault gun, not even a pistol. Some kind of pistol, whatever. Some kind of gun at the convenience clerk and just keep walking out. And one of the guys, as he's trying to get out the front door of the convenience store, his Bud Light box fails and 12 of the beers spill out. So they only got away with 3 12-packs. And then they got into a car. This is at 1 a.m. At a gas station on White Settlement Road. So it's an uncomfortable town and road. But they each do it. And they leave in a car, a dark Toyota Corolla that has a Michael Jordan sticker on the back.
I did see that. It's the Jumpman.
It's got the Jumpman. But they had covered up their license plate.
Oh, my God. I just watched him spill all the beer as he's leaving.
Yeah.
Lord.
So, Brooke. What in the world would possess two men to risk aggravated robbery charges? Now, if they had just walked out with the beer, it's robbery. If you have a weapon, if you brandish a weapon, it's aggravated robbery. And all of a sudden the charges go up as they should, right? One, shoplifting, not good. Prosecute him, please. But like scaring the hell out of the poor guy working the convenience store at 1 a.m. by pointing a gun at him. Next level. You can get 5 to 99 years for this. And all they got were 3 12-packs of Bud Light. If you're going to do aggravated robbery, get your 3 12-packs and then get the lottery tickets or something. Get the money from the... like 4 12-packs attempted. One didn't make it. 3 12-packs. How desperate were these guys for a beer? What are you doing, people? Bud Light? They didn't grab some of those convenience stores. I mean, they get $200 bottles, you know, like at least stop me. Like, can I get that, like, you know, super good Don Julio up there? Can I get the Macallan Reserve 21? 3 12-packs of Bud Light and you're brandishing a weapon and risking 5 to 99 years in prison? We have had a lot of crazy, dumb criminals on this show. Pat, what is happening in Fort Worth?
Yeah, look, I mean, you know who's like friggin' embarrassed by these guys is the original Bud Light Bandit. Mm. It's like, I got five by myself. You guys can't even get 4 out the door.
5 cases. I mean, he got 5 24-packs.
Yeah, 5 cases.
These guys amateurs, except for their gun.
36 total beers. I mean, that's a weak effort. And yes, it's Bud Light. For the love of God, what are you possibly doing? So I have complete disdain for these people, and I want to see them. Give them the 99. Forget the 5. Go to the opposite end. Give them the 99 years for aggravated robbery. For bad taste, for low levels of achievement, and really low levels of aspiration. Like you said, I mean, if you're going to risk going to the slammer, you got to go big. You got to take a lot of stuff out of that store, not 3 12-packs of Bud Light.
$60, 45. Yeah. 45 got out the door. $45 worth of beer. Did you really need a gun? $45.
Yeah. And I mean, don't you figure every convenience store in a city has cameras and they don't like no masks, no nothing covering their faces? Like, hey, here we are with our gun. Unbelievable.
Do they have to be high, right?
Probably a good assumption.
That's all I can think of here. That's the only explanation, is they're high.
Drunk.
It won't get you out of the slammer, but.
You know. Yeah, right. Try that one for the defense attorney. Well, we were high at the time.
I mean, on the way out, they passed the little ice cream cooler. At least grab like a Choco Taco or a drumstick there. And I mean, really, the dark Corolla with the Jumpman logo in the back, there's not that. Like, they're going to get caught so quick.
Yeah. No.
Hey, that's Jimmy and Eddie.
Yeah.
No, it's a different Corolla. Well, you guys are really hungover on Sunday morning.
Oh, well, Jimmy and Eddie, they were in here last week. Oh, we're bringing them back.
Yeah, that's true. You probably just went to the neighborhood place. Anyway, anyone with information, call the Fort Worth police. We got to stop this. We need our clerks at the late night beer stores to feel safe and secure for all of us who are willing to pay for our Bud Light bottles or any other drink you want. I mean, they got everything in this. This looks like a good store. Sunglasses. They got all sorts of vape. They got a vape thing. That's probably more. Hats. They got to sell Stetson hats at every convenience store down there. Anyway, this is not how we want to start the summer, people. Let's tighten it up. All right. We'll be back later in the week. More college football. We'll see who's arguing with each other then. Continue to subscribe, share us on social media, tell your friends about us. We appreciate you, and we will talk to you later.